Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour, Episode 11, with Amber MacArthur and Sarah Lane, recorded Monday, June 6th, 2011. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website or blog. For a free 14-day trial, go to squarespace.com/socialhour. And be sure to check out their annual plans for savings of up to 20% off. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies streamed to your PC, Mac, or TV instantly. Plus, get DVDs by mail in about one business day. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Welcome to The Social Hour, Episode 11 from Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from a steamy Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And by steamy, I mean it's finally starting to heat up for summer. So we're very appreciative of that.
So how hot is hot? Because it is not hot at all in the Bay Area at all. In fact, we've had more rain. It's the fourth wettest June, even though it's only June 6th, in history. In the Bay Area, because we've had an inch of rain.
Well, it's pushing. It's almost 80 here, I would say. It's getting up there, and it's going to be a little bit above 80, actually, coming up on Wednesday. So we expect to have a fairly warm week, and that will probably lean into a pretty pretty hot summer as well. I feel like a weather forecaster right now.
Well, you sound like one. You're actually really good. You know, it's funny. We're talking about the weather and how weather's different depending on where you are. It's kind of crappy in the Bay Area. It sounds hot and steamy in Toronto. We actually have a guest today that is an expert on, you know, trying to figure out where the best place to go is, mm-hmm. depending on the weather and where you want to get away and so on and so forth, because he is the CEO and co-founder of a website called Oyster. And if you haven't heard of it, he's here to tell us a lot more about Ellie Seidman, or is it Seidman? Welcome to
Seidman.
The show.
You got it right.
Seidman.
Seidman. Hey there. Thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Ellie, what is Oyster.com? It's not about fish. It's not about seafood. It's about travel and hotels, isn't it?
Yeah, it's about basically an expert take on hotels. So if you kind of think about TripAdvisor as you generated content for hotels, Oyster is expert reviewers who go to hotels for Oyster and cover the hotels, you know, A to Z. And then the hotels get categorized, they get photographed, they kind of get rated with Oyster's pearls. So it's a really comprehensive way to figure out in advance of where you're going to go, what a place is going to be like. And it's really meant to be kind of the most comprehensive place on the web for hotel coverage. To date, it's about 15 destinations and growing. We're in the process of growing rapidly, so we're expanding the coverage pretty aggressively. But today, it's predominantly U.S. destinations, although that'll change in the coming kind of year or so.
I have so many questions for you, because I was taking a peek on the site, and the first thing that really came to my mind is thinking about sites like TripAdvisor, where people go in and leave comments. But I'm curious about the team of people when you say experts. So are these people that you hire, or do you find them as freelancers? Do you pay them? How does all of that work?
Yeah, so we've used a bunch of different approaches tactically, but the kind of the core idea is they're people who are very knowledgeable and experienced about looking at hotels and reviewing hotels. A huge part of what the site does also is it covers the hotels photographically. So it's not just what we say, it's also what we see, and we show you what we see. So I think that in a lot of regards, if you think about user-generated content and TripAdvisor as being, you know, lots of different people who have each been to one hotel, and you don't really know them, you don't really have a sense of their perspective, we're, in a sense, you know, one person or set of people who have been to lots and lots of hotels. So we get to compare the hotels to each other. We really bring a kind of a detailed perspective. We've used freelancers. We've used full-time people to do it. The most important thing is they're trained to Oyster standards. And then I think in particular, the photography is a really big part of it. If you look at any hotel in Oyster, we've really covered it photographically from A to Z. So you know exactly what you're going to get when you go.
You know, Ellie, before I went to my most recent vacation was a trip to Hawaii. And we had looked up the hotel that we thought that we wanted to go to. And sure enough, Oyster had like 600 photos of a hotel on Maui. And what was nice about it was that we had originally gone to, it was Four Seasons. We had originally gone to the Four Seasons website, looked it up, and went, wow, this looks really, really nice. But, you know, the hotel websites are always going to make something look as beautiful as possible and probably enhance it via Photoshop and make that sunset twice as dramatic as it might be. But the pictures on Oyster weren't too far off, and it gave us a much better sense that these are just normal people taking pictures, and nobody has anything to exaggerate. And that was extremely helpful. How do you choose the folks that you decide to work with to make them professionals rather than just someone on TripAdvisor who might have a really different idea of a good experience in Hawaii from me?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the really tough part when it comes to user-generated content for experiences. Unlike, let's say, user-generated content for a Sony DVD player, right? You're really bringing in the subjective element dramatically. So what we try to do actually on Oyster is really take as much as possible the focus on the things that are objective. You know, for example, is a hotel kid-friendly? Well, there's a whole bunch of criteria define a hotel as being kid-friendly. Does it have certain resources? Are there babysitters? Is there, you know, kids club? Is there a kids pool? There's all kinds of these different things, which in a sense are very, very objective. And we just categorize those very closely. So I think you really eliminate a lot of the kind of he said, she said, I loved it, I hated it. The challenge with TripAdvisor that I've always found, and is one of the impetuses for founding Oyster, is that you go there and you look at even the best hotels in the world, in my opinion, and you'll find that there's 10 people who say they loved it and 10 people say they hated it. And so I don't think you necessarily end off in a better place. I think there's a lot of frustration with the complexity of that experience. And Oyster really brings, I think, a simplified experience. First of all, you get this huge visual, so you really see exactly what you're going to get. And then we really comprehensively go through the different features that are really the kind of things that are there no matter what. So kid-friendly is but one example. There's other things. We really try to stay away from those things which are truly subjective. We have a good line, which I think is we're picky, but we're not petty. So if you had a kind of a rude person, right, a rude bellman or a slightly rude bellman, we're not going to kind of get up and rant about that as the kind of the entirety of our experience. We're trying
because
to,
there are
try
always exceptions to an experience, right?
Yeah, exactly. And these are complex. I mean, if you think about a hotel right there, you know, the Maui Four Seasons probably has like 400 rooms, right? It's these big, complex organizations. Exactly. There's going to be lots of exceptions in the course of a year.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. I mean, this is one of the things that always frustrates me because I travel a lot and I always look up the hotel online. But I always get the feeling that there could possibly be people out there who kind of are gaming the system. And what I mean by that is whether it's the hotel managers or people who work for them. And I'm an advocate of social media, but the reality is I think that, you know, it's just hard to trust the information that's out there. You kind of touched on this, but I'm just curious if that was one of the reasons that you started Oyster, is just felt as though there really wasn't a place to go to kind of get this real, almost like objective opinion.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's other people who have written a fair amount about this now. So it's over the past couple of years, you've seen kind of more and more of these stories. I think that one of the big challenges is this is big business. And so if you're a hotelier and you're affected by TripAdvisor or one of the other user-generated content sites, TripAdvisor is clearly the largest, it creates a real challenge for you to not be in the game when you know it's very likely or almost certain that your competitors are gaming the system and writing bad reviews about you. What do you do? You know, there's nothing illegal about it. It's, I think, certainly totally improper. And we certainly would like to imagine it doesn't happen, but I think it's certainly happening out there. So I think that you have a combination of the complexity of just lots of different people with different perspectives and opinions. And then, of course, the financial incentive to get in there and game the system. So I think if it's not happening, that would be shocking. I think it's pretty widely agreed upon that it is happening. And the question is just how pervasive is it?
Ellie, I noticed that there are sales to be viewed on Oyster. And they look like they have limited limited times that you can book these sales. It kind of reminds me a little bit of something like Jet Setter. What's is this a new feature on Oyster?
It's been around for a while. I mean, I think that if you think about Oyster, right, we're trying to combine a very comprehensive editorial take and kind of build off of that trust. And then you have hotels who are looking to, you know, get rid of remainder inventory, right? Inventory that is, in a sense, off peak. And so that's what it is. I think if you think about any retailer, regardless of the tactics they take, and we certainly have a retail component to what we do, there's going to be sales and discounts that run for a piece of time. It's certainly a small piece of what we do. So if you look at Jet Setter, it's certainly the entirety of what they do. And I think they do a very, very good job with flash sales. I think they're the best of the flash sales sites by far. For us, it's very much a kind of an add-on. It's a small piece of what we do.
Can you talk a little bit about the logged in experience versus the experience that's just kind of open to the public? Because it seems as though there is the ability to get a lot more in-depth information if you do have an account.
Yeah, so there's the logged in experience and the kind of logged out experience are starting to diverge a little bit, and I think they're going to continue to diverge in the coming couple of quarters as we do more and more, particularly with customization. So the experience that you have, there's going to be, I think, twofold. One, today predominantly you can see everything across the site, whether you're logged in or logged out, and that will probably change a tiny little bit over the kind of coming quarters. But I think what's going to be bigger is really a focus on customization, where you know the site becomes more and more tailored to you. We pick up both because you tell us stuff, a la kind of Netflix, but also because of your behavior, because of what we see about what you like and what you don't like, what you look at and what you don't look at. I'm trying to create an experience that, you know, I think a la Netflix or a la Amazon is as customized as possible to your preferences. Travel is so preference driven. Somebody who's going for kind of a bachelor weekend in Vegas versus a family who's going to San Francisco or LA for the weekend, very different set of needs. And as you can imagine, right? And there's a lot of stuff on the site. So we want to try to make the site as easy as possible for you to discover the things that are really best suited for you.
Ellie, I love the photo fake outs. The photo fake outs are awesome because this is exactly what I'm talking about. It's two versions of a photo, maybe what the hotel would like you to think is going on versus reality. Like for everyone who's watching the video stream right now, it's a sexy guy with a surfboard walking out of what ends up being a very small pool. What would he be doing in the pool with a surfboard? It just kind of looked like an interesting background at first. Do you have representatives from hotels angry at you guys? Stuff like this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, what we say is that if you like the truth, you'll like Oyster, and if you don't, you obviously won't. And so I think we're doing very, very simple things. We go to a place, we take the same photo from the same angle or the same place and just, show you what's really there. And I think what makes it so compelling, what makes it so funny is we've all had this experience in one way, shape, or form or another, right? I mean, if this didn't resonate at some very deep level, it wouldn't be entertaining. But the reason it's been so entertaining is because we've all had this. And I think it's unfortunate. It's a product, right, that you can't see before you buy. You can't return once you arrive, or certainly it's very hard to. And it's expensive. It's your it's your time, kind of, particularly if it's vacation, it's emotional time. We did this because we love hotels, not because we dislike hotels. And I think if you look on Oyster, you'll see there's a ton of fantastic hotels that look as beautiful on Oyster as they look in real life. So I think if you think about Oyster broadly, it really rewards hoteliers who do a fantastic job. We've heard kind of the rumbling, certainly from hoteliers who don't like it. But what is it really to say? I mean, it's kind of nothing to really respond to.
Right.
I think it's fantastic.
It's just sort of the reality of all of it, huh, Amber?
Yeah. We've all experienced that. You know, you go online, you see a picture of a hotel room. It looks really bright and spacious, and the pool looks fantastic. And you get there, and it turns out that the pool is like a wading pool. And, your hotel room is dark and dingy, and it overlooks some really loud club. And so I think we've all had those experiences. And it's almost like it's too easy to lie online. So it's about time someone has kind of stepped up and started to give a more truthful view. I was just reading on the New York Times that the Travel Channel has invested over $7 million in Oyster.com. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship and what it means for the future of the site?
Yeah. So recently the Travel Channel invested $7.5 million in Oyster as part of a $10 million financing, and it means a bunch of different things. I mean, the broad idea behind it was, they believe in kind of a very high quality content approach. And I think where they really play is kind of inspiring people, right? You're sitting back, you're watching TV, you see like Anthony Bourdain going to these really cool places and doing those cool things. And you then want to go do them yourself. And so I think what we very much, our combined vision between the two of us is to say, okay, how do we enable that? How do we make that possible so that there's a next step beyond just watching it on TV? So whether it's, that afternoon or a month or 2 months or 6 months from now, you can go and do those things. I think from a very practical perspective, the financial resources of Travel Channel and Scripps, which is the owner of Travel Channel, really means for us that we can go and expand the coverage of Oyster to be totally comprehensive. So the goal over the coming 18 to 24 months is to take Oyster and the Oyster concept and really go to, you know, go around the world. You know, I think if you think about places like, I was just in Africa 10 days ago, and I think for most people, particularly in the U.S., going to Africa is kind of, that's exotic and it's far away and it's a little bit scary. And I think if you imagine a destination being oystered, suddenly that becomes much less risky. You're not going to show up and have that experience that is unexpected. So I think it's, Oyster is fantastic for the U.S. and I think it's great, but I think it's going to be even more exciting and interesting for a lot of kind of more exotic destinations around the world. So having the financial resources to go do that is, you know, is certainly, you know, really, really important to accomplishing the vision we have for it.
Very cool. Looks like an awesome site. I will definitely be using it, and I hopefully will avoid those hotels that have been lying to me for years.
Exactly. Ellie, one quick question before we let you go. You've obviously, you do this for a living. You're well-traveled. You have a lot of experience with hotels and what's good versus what's bad. Is there like just a top destination that, you know, if money were no object, you just can't miss in the hotel world?
In the hotel world, yeah. I mean, I think so. I think if money is no object, New York has, I think at this point in time, probably the best hotel inventory anywhere. I mean, I think it's just absolutely stunning, the number of really unique hotels. I'm a New Yorker, so I'm a little bit biased here, but there's a tremendous number of hotels. And I've been to hotels in LA and San Francisco and lots in Paris and London, lots of great places around the world. But I think New York has the kind of the widest, broadest variety by far. I think it's just, it's stunning. There's 190 hotels, I think, on Oyster for New York, and we're not covering every single hotel in New York. I think a ton of those are these really fantastic boutique hotels and unique design. So I think in a lot of ways, it's the world's showcase for hotels. If you want to do something more, you'll go further afield in the U.S., then I think Hong Kong is fantastic, and there's been a real resurgence there of late. So not surprisingly, big cities around the world have great hotels. London does, Paris does, but I think New York really takes the cake. If you're looking for a destination that is kind of unexpectedly has fantastic five-star places, it's really Africa. So there's all these kind of, and you've probably seen these photos of African safari lodges, which tend to be very small, anywhere from 10 to 20 rooms. And it's kind of middle of nowhere stuff, stunningly five-star beauty in the middle of nowhere. Very, very unique. I really went for the first time 10 days ago. I can't recommend it highly enough. A very unique, life-changing experience.
I'm really glad you said that, because I'm trying to convince my boyfriend, who has no interest in going to Africa, that we really want to go to Africa. So
perfect.
This episode is interesting.
You really
just
do.
Just cut this,
you really
clip
do.
Out, Sarah.
Exactly.
You're all set.
You heard it here, and he's an expert, honey.
Thank you so much for joining us. Great
Thanks
to
so
get
much,
some
Ellie.
Insight into it. Looks like an awesome site, and now you can go off and get some sleep or keep making it even better. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Ellie. Have a good night.
Have a good night. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Amber, I'm not kidding about the whole Africa thing.
Yeah, no, I would love to go to Africa. I think it would be amazing. So you should go, Sarah. Try it out.
I will.
Give us a review and then let us know.
I will, yes. You know, it's funny. Alex Lindsay is quite the Africa expert.
Yes.
And he just, we were DMing about, you know what? It was for iPad Today, and he's got young kids, and he's always talking about how the iPad is such a great tool for children. And I knew that he was in Africa, so we were just DMing each other on Twitter because I wanted some recommendations. And he was just talking about how much fun he's having, and he feels so at home in Africa. And it's like, oh man, I want to feel at home in Africa. That just sounds like very, very far away from the knowledge, the tiny little bit of knowledge that I have about it and my expectations of it. So hopefully one day Alex Lindsay will give me a really good tech angle and I'll be able to go.
Yeah. Get over there and visit. I know he's been going there forever. I remember working back with him in the Call for Help days when Leah was doing the show up here. He used to come up every month, but he's been spending a lot of time in Africa for years now. I think they have does he have an office over there and a little studio as well?
You know, he probably does. I wish I knew the answer. I want to say yes, but I know he does a lot of like infrastructure and helping people build out not just internet access, but work with schools and nonprofits. Mm. And he speaks at conferences over there. He was just telling me about a music festival that happens in, I think, Zimbabwe, that's sort of similar to South by Southwest. But he goes, it's South by Southwest, but like way cooler.
He's awesome.
Okay, then I guess that's really cool then. So anyway, if you guys have Africa tips, send them our way. No, I'm just kidding. If you aren't watching us live right now, then you don't even realize that we're taping the show at kind of an off time. It was WWDC, which of course is the worldwide developers conference for Apple this morning, at least in San Francisco. So we are taping our show later than usual, but our normal time is Mondays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, on Mondays right here at twit.tv. And if you miss that time, or you go, wait a second, I thought that you guys were live at a certain time and you did a show at a weird time this week, not to worry, because you can get all of our shows on demand whenever you want to watch them or listen to the audio stream at twit.tv/TSH. That's the Social Hours page. So not only can you just watch any of our episodes, this is episode 11. So, Amber, I like to call these the palindrome episodes. We won't have another one until episode 22. So this is very special. It's like
very special show.
Yeah. So you can see our first 10 shows, which have been very eclectic, all sorts of guests. We try to have a really good mix of guests and people who are interested in social media and doing really interesting things, like letting the public know what's really going on with hotels so that you're not tricked into going somewhere that you don't want to go. And all sorts of other stuff. I mean, we try to be as well-rounded as possible on the Social Hour, because social is such an all-encompassing kind of a thing now. And we really appreciate anybody who subscribes. And then you don't even have to think about it. You can just watch the show whenever you like. So...
Or listen to it in your car, which I'm sure is what most people do, or not necessarily in the car, but listen to the audio version as well. So we appreciate all of your support. Sarah, also people can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv.
Indeed. We also have a Google Voice number, and one of you wrote into me. Oh, what was your name? Craig Porter wrote in and said, you know, last week you weren't sure where your Google Voice number was local. It is southeastern Wisconsin. 2626 social is our number. So I was like, I'm not really sure where that is a local number. It's a Google Voice number, and I liked it because I liked the name. So thanks, Craig Porter. I guess that would have been a really easy Google search, but you did it for me. Before we get on to the rest of the show, Amber, we would be remiss not to thank Squarespace, who's our first sponsor, because they are the best way to create a high-quality website or blog. In fact, I was tinkering in my Squarespace blog. That's where I have my blog hosted recently, because Twitter had released that nifty little follow button, Amber, where you can embed that in a variety of places, and it's a really one-click, easy way for people to just follow you, rather than it's different than like a Twitter link where you would say follow me on Twitter and then it dumps someone over to your Twitter page where then they have to follow. It's just a one-click follow, very much like a Facebook like button. So I went ahead and embedded that in my about area of my website, and it was really easy. And I thought, man, you know, I got to get in here and tinker in Squarespace more often, because it's kind of a pleasure. They're laid out a little bit differently than some of the blog back ends that you might be familiar with. It's really, really easy to set up a blog or a photo gallery or embed some Twitter widgets. They make it really, really easy, especially for social stuff. But they have a variety of designs that you can choose from. I mean, just from regular layouts that you can go ahead and just, you know, change the name of the site and you're off and running, or you can get really customizable if that's your bag. Squarespace is good for all of that stuff. Like the Die Line, it's a design and art blog, and it looks really unique. It's like no other Squarespace page, and that's kind of the beauty of it, because Squarespace is it's a blog for everybody, really. And what you can do is now I'm all interested in this design blog. Oh, I love this stuff. It's so easy to get. What I always tell people to go to Squarespace's examples page, because you can kind of get lost in all the different ways that people lay out their blogs, and then you get inspired and you kind of want to go tinkering around and changing things within your
own
blog.
I'm on a site right now called The Cake Spy, and this is a Squarespace site that is essentially all about baking. And not that I bake, but I imagine one day that maybe if I have time, I might bake muffins or a cake or something.
Yeah, why not?
This site kind of has me inspired. It's called CakeSpy.com. It's just a lot of fun, a lot of great images and little write-ups of different bakeries in the San Francisco area. So it's a really beautiful site. I mean, it's hard to believe that, you know, someone has just created this, probably who doesn't have a lot of design skills, but really just use Squarespace to help make it happen.
Exactly. So if you're interested in Squarespace and you want to try to figure out if it's the thing for you, here's what you do. Go to squarespace.com/social hour. That's our special special URL so then they know you came through us. And then you can go ahead and just sign up for a free trial. You don't have to enter your credit card number or anything. You just pick a login, password, email address, and you just kind of get to designing. It's extremely easy process, and Squarespace just, they want you to understand that it is a very easy way to put a site together. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. It's actually made me kind of love the creation of blogs because they make it really easy. And if you get stuck, they have really good customer service too. I use it all the time, and the folks that work at Squarespace are really, really nice. Again, that's squarespace.com/socialhour, and we thank them so much for being a great partner of the show. Amber, did you watch any of the WWDC keynotes or announcements or read all the crazy buzz on Twitter and beyond?
Yeah, you know what? I was actually invited to go out there to see the keynote. Unfortunately, I had a speaking event in Toronto, so I couldn't make it. So I've been trying to play catch up and keeping on top of some of the recent news. I mean, it seems like although there were a few different announcements, nothing obviously too massive, but on the social side, a few things. Probably the thing that I thought was the most interesting is the iMessage, which will replace texting. So the idea that you can get together with groups of people and have chats on your iPhone. And the reason it's of interest to me, I've been a BlackBerry user for a while, although I do have both, and I use BBM on the BlackBerry, and that's one of the reasons I love it is just the idea of sort of messaging with people and doing group messaging. It's just really handy for my other friends who have BlackBerries, and I know a lot of people who are BlackBerry users love that feature so much, and it's one of the reasons that keeps them stuck on that particular device. So not a big surprise, I guess, that you'll be able to get this on your iPhone, but I think it, you know, on the social side is something that we should mention.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting. I've heard a lot of people compare this to BBM for BlackBerry users. I have not been a BlackBerry user for some years, but I definitely am a user of iOS apps that provide what it sounds like iMessage is trying to replicate. So it's not going through SMS. It's a, you know, it's an app, a group messaging service. Some obvious examples are GroupMe or Beluga, or I mean, the list goes on. There are many of them, and they've kind of gained in popularity. And I've been using them almost exclusively because I think, well, wait a second, if I can just get all my friends to start using these services, then I don't really have to pay for a texting plan that's separate from a data plan, and wouldn't that be nice? So it sounds like Apple's sort of like, yeah, well, the carriers can stick it, and we're just going to build something called iMessage, which provides everything natively that people like me were already enjoying. Does it seem like it's offering something that is better than the BlackBerry experience rather than just kind of a ripoff?
I mean, I think BBM, for anyone who's been using it for a while, it is a pretty great service on the BlackBerry, and it's been a differentiator for a while. So there's nothing really that clunky about it. It's actually a really nice little feature. It's super simple to use, super simple to add people as well. So, however, I will say that, you know, anything that comes out of Apple, you know, generally speaking, the user experience sometimes is just head and shoulders above what else is out there. So I need to give it a whirl and see if I can kind of compare the two. But I think this is a biggie. I can't tell you how many people I know who are BlackBerry users who say that they would never leave the BlackBerry because of BBM. That's been one thing that they've loved. And I know there's lots of apps out there that could do the same thing and kind of replicate it. But for a lot of people, it's not the same. And they, you know, they like this actually kind of built into their smartphone.
There's also much more robust. It looks like it'll be Notification Center. I mean, anybody who runs a lot of social apps, I've learned to turn off a lot of my notifications because you're just getting this this box pop up in front of everything that you're already doing, and it's impossible. It's just impossible to have notifications anytime anybody DMs me or emails me or sends me a message. I actually use Boxcar right now, which is an app that is kind of a notification management system. Again, looks like Apple's saying, well, let's just do this natively so that you can have notifications all in one place. This obviously includes messages and emails and calendar items and reminders, which reminds me a little bit of, you know, kind of more of an Evernote or a Remember the Milk type of service. So again, it's as if they've taken a page out of so many of their third-party success stories and integrated it so that people can manage their social lives better. You know, we were talking about this a little bit earlier on today's TNT. It's like, whether or not you think it's mean of Apple, you know, they're kind of like the big bad guys who might put smaller development teams or single party developers out of business. They're obviously going to do things like that when the developer has shown that it's a good product and that the public has a need for it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. I don't think this wasn't a huge surprise to me, but, you know, I think it will be a feature that definitely iPhone users are going to absolutely love, like all the notifications and all the iMessaging as well. Speaking of Apple, Sarah, I love the story that you put into the rundown about a guy who lost his MacBook. Yeah. And fortunately, he was using an app that allowed him to trace who had taken his MacBook. And it took pictures of this individual and helped to actually track down his MacBook. So it looks like the Oakland police were of help as well. And he finally got the guy. So a great story. We're hearing a lot more stories like this, actually. I've heard a couple of stories in the past little while where people are using different apps. This one, this particular one's called Hidden, and it obviously worked like a charm.
This is the greatest story. I mean, this guy had downloaded a program called Hidden that takes sort of anonymous pictures with your iSight camera. And also records, you know, what's going on in your screen. And this is the guy that took the MacBook. He's looking at it. The owner of the MacBook could see where he was deleting the original account on the MacBook, you know, to delete all traces of the actual owner, you know, to set up his own Facebook account, Google account, just hanging out in bed, don't really know. I love the bed frame. I'm kind of obsessed with it, actually. Sleeping. What's interesting about this story is that it got almost no attention from the Oakland Police Department when, I think his name is Josh, originally reported the crime. He said, listen, this happened. I've got an app running on my MacBook that can possibly lead to you finding this person. I know where his location is. And I think, he got some sort of runaround, like, we don't have the manpower to follow this lead or whatever. Well, it turns out that he put together a Tumble log. That was where the pictures that I just showed you came from. And, of course, socially it spread like wildfire, because not only is it kind of funny, because, I mean, he's obviously capturing somewhat humorous pictures of what is this man doing with my MacBook in his weird house type of a thing, but it's kind of ingenious how he was following along. And I believe it was when Good Morning America caught wind of the story, called the Oakland Police Department to inquire as to why they weren't giving this theft more attention, that then they said, let's give it more attention. And he eventually got his MacBook. They found the guy and he got his MacBook back. He also posted, it's really interesting, on Flickr, to his Flickr account. Joshua Kaufman's his name. Just a little snapshot in the first few days of where all his traffic was coming from, which just gives you a sense of how many folks were actually visiting his Tumble log and from where. I mean, most of them were direct links. Facebook was the second as far as referral links go, with Twitter and then Reddit and then Dig and then so on and so forth after that. But turns out Facebook definitely wins for anything non-direct as far as referral links go, which is in line with what we've been hearing lately.
Yeah.
That Facebook is really the place that drives the most traffic, with Twitter in not a very distant second in this place, but definitely second. It's great. I love this stuff.
Great story. We should also mention that if you're interested in getting the Hidden app and using this to protect your own laptop, that I was just looking up online. So for a basic subscription, it's about $15 a year. That is so reasonable. I mean, you can protect one computer. That works out to about $1.25 a month. A really, really good solution to be able to make sure if someone steals your computer that you can track them down. If you get the home version, it's $45 a month. So that protects up to five computers. So a lot of fun, and I'm sure that we'll hear many more stories like this. Hopefully, it will make those thieves scared out there, Sarah.
Yeah, exactly. This is the sort of program that I can imagine someone explaining to me and me saying, well, that's for really paranoid people. Until something like this happens, and then you go, I wish I would have had that installed.
So, yeah, I love it.
So Josh Kaufman is like, yes, finally.
Yes. So, and speaking of stealing stuff, Sarah, we talked about, I think it was Urban Outfitters, how there was an artist from Etsy who, I guess, their design had been stolen, and I think it was for necklaces, if I'm remembering correctly, that were in the shape of different states. So there's an update to the story, which is always nice.
Yeah, there is an update to the story, and it comes from Well, it came to me via a humor take on Etsy called Regretsy. I've talked about it on various, I don't know, where I was working. Maybe I even talked about it on Net at Night back in the day, in the past. But it's kind of like, here are some of the weirder things that people are making.
I remember you talking about this.
Yeah, and Regretsy doesn't really, it's not really in the business of picking apart news stories like this. But they certainly are in the business of keeping tabs on Etsy and what people are selling on Etsy. And pretty much Regretsy had written up a thought piece that more or less said, listen, the artist who claims that Urban Outfitters ripped her off, she probably completely believes that she thought up the design. But here I have some examples of people who have offered on Etsy designs that are very similar to hers. And what ended up happening is, and that's whether or not, you know, you want to go with that theory is up to you. But what happened is that Urban Outfitters on their official blog, because I remember last week we were saying, well, they're going to have to say something because obviously they're a big corporation and they can't just, you know, rip off designers and not come back with some official PR statement. They not only said, listen, we didn't rip off anybody, but they actually linked to that exact Regretsy post that showed the artist wasn't the first person technically to have thought up this design idea, which if anyone doesn't remember, it's pretty much like a necklace that's in a shape of a particular state with a little heart in the middle of it. Let's see if I can get this to load. We've had so many connectivity issues here. Yeah, so this is the Urban Outfitters version. This is the artist in question's version. But then when you go down a little bit lower, here's another version by yet another artist, which is, you know, it's not exactly the same design, but the idea is so similar that it's hard to say, well, I mean, when does this really, you know, how far does this actually go back? You know, do people just come up with artistic ideas that are similar because they're good ideas?
Yeah, and, exactly.
You know, it's very hard to claim that someone has ripped you off if indeed someone else could claim that you ripped them off. So it's just sort of, you know, it's an interesting take on this whole thing, because I think my first reaction was, oh, wow, Urban Outfitters just really got caught here doing something pretty bad. And I guess it's not always that easy, especially when
you read a little bit more and you realize that, it's, I'm sure there's a lot of people who have done those types of designs, but it's fun to follow along with the story, right? And the story never ends in the social media world, which is always interesting. You know, it'll keep going on for so long. Sarah, for our social tip this week, it was funny. I was kind of racking my brain thinking, oh, what would be a good social media tip? I'm always stumbling across new things, but I saw something last week that I've never seen before. And I thought it was really fun for people out there who manage their own Facebook pages and are looking for a creative idea to really highlight someone in their community, a member of their Facebook page. So I use a storage facility in Toronto called Storage Mart. Mm-hmm. And they had written me an email last week and said, hey, we want to feature you as our friend of the week. And I thought, yeah, that's no problem. Do I have to do anything? And they said no. And I didn't really realize what they were doing. I thought maybe this was going to be a blog post or something written up. Well, it turns out what they do with their Facebook profile page, so they have their own Facebook page, and with the picture, the profile picture, is they essentially take a person's picture and they highlight that person within their own profile as the friend of the week. So it's taking advantage of that real estate on Facebook where you normally just have your company's logo and actually putting a person there and saying, this is our friend of the week. We're highlighting a fan of our company. And I've never seen it done, like I mentioned. I just think it's fun. It's an easy way, obviously a free way, as long as you get permission from the individual to use their picture to kind of showcase someone in your community who you're really proud of them being a customer or a client.
So this is, we're looking at a gal named Navina right now, who's, I guess, the friend of the week. So now when you said, yes, okay, I'll agree to this idea, was your profile picture the friend of the week, at least for some amount of time?
Yep. Yeah, cool. So they just put my picture up there. So it's a simple, I mean, it's a little tiny thing, but it's a simple thing that you can do with your Facebook
page. Oh, yeah, here you are. So they're saving these, each friend of the week. Oh, that's a good picture of you.
That took a lot of work, that picture. For people who are listening and can't see this, I have to tell you, I went to a photo shoot for like 6 hours with a stylist and, you know, a cameraman and obviously, and a bunch of people and makeup person and hair. And they took this picture and there was a stylist there and she had all these clothes and the picture is my head. So it was just kind of a funny shoot. So literally they took forever to get a shot that's now my Facebook profile.
Well,
picture.
It's a very nice one.
Like it?
I love this idea from Storage Mart. You're right. This is almost, it's like one of the simplest ideas they could have come across, but I've never actually seen it before.
So neither.
You get these folks who are loyal customers. Storage Mart says, we want to make you friend of the week. The folks say, okay. So, I mean, they're getting their permission. And then imagine how cool it is when you end up being friend of the week and then you tell your friends. And it's a great word of mouth, certainly on Facebook. Exactly. And then, you know, I assume that Storage Mart gets some word of mouth to, you know, actually their core business as well and get some more customers out of it.
Yeah, it's just the recognition I like, you know, it's just a fun way to recognize someone in the community. So there's our tip of the week, Sarah.
I love the tip of the week. What I also love is Netflix. Netflix is the way to stream instantly over the internet, your computer, your TV, your Xbox 360, your PS3, the list goes on. Movies, TV series. It's the best. I'm a Netflix instant user and I watch way too many movies, but it's actually a really good excuse because I'm like, I have Netflix, I'm paying for the service and I can get unlimited stuff just streamed with just a couple of clicks. I actually have a Netflix enabled Sony Bravia TV. So, it's even easier for me. I don't even have to go through an Apple TV, although I could if I wanted to. Works really well with Apple TV. You can also, if you're a DVD person, you can get DVDs sent to you in the mail. That's Netflix's, that was how their model originally started. People knew them that way and people loved them. So you can still do that if you're more of a in and out of the mailbox kind of a person, or you can go instant. It's always up to you. They have a lot of titles, especially their instant collection is growing by the day. They've got old classics. They've got new releases. If you're a Blu-ray fan, you can get those sent to you via DVD. And if you want to check out Netflix, here's where the special comes in. If you go to netflix.com/twit, you get 30 days for free. Just 30 days of watching movies and TV series. Amber, how many movies do you think you could get through if you really had 30 days?
I could get through a few. You know, I'm into the series. Like right now I'm watching Mad Men and I never watched Mad Men before. So I'm on season 2. So I'm more of a series person. So like I could literally get through a series like within a few days. If I'm addicted, I'll stay up till the wee hours of the morning watching something because I can't stop. So right now I'm watching Mad Men, but with shows like The Wire, I mean, I literally watched that back to back. I've done that with Dexter as well. So I'm a series gal.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm getting through Breaking Bad right now. And it's easy to get hooked on stuff. If you want to just browse through the selections on Netflix, let's just say you think this is a great service, but I just can't think of anything I want to watch right now. Get inspired. You can look up a bunch of movies. I actually haven't seen the movie Kick-Ass, but everyone who has.
Good.
Well, sir, have you seen it? So
yeah.
It's kind of funny and different than you think it's going to be. Let's just say you go to Netflix and you think, okay, maybe this is the service for me. I don't know. I don't know if I want to commit. Just start the free trial because you can at least get some free movies out of it, right? So find, you just click on start your 1 month free trial, enter your email, password, continue, and you're off and running. You get your email and you set up your account easily and you can just start adding stuff to your queue. It's that easy. This is what I want to watch next and you go ahead and watch it. Netflix is awesome. And for anybody who's like, I know it's awesome. I already have an account. What do you want me to do? Maybe consider Netflix as a gift for a friend, for your dad, someone who just graduated, dads and grads, you know, I keep seeing people, you know, graduates having parties every Friday night, you know, everywhere that I'm going around the city. It's graduation season. Maybe somebody's birthday, you know, they're a movie buff, but they're maybe not all that technical and they think Netflix is like kind of a big deal and they're not going to pull the trigger. Great gift. Think of giving someone a year of movies. Awesome. So we thank Netflix so much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour.
Love it. All right, Sarah, we have lots of feedback, it looks like, emails and voicemails. Do we want to try to tackle all these or pick a couple that are good? What do you think about the voicemail?
Yeah, well, we did get an email from Kathy Grant, who in a nutshell was like, I want to be part of Twitter, but I feel like I don't really have any followers, and a lot of my friends just aren't on Twitter, and what do you do? We also got a similar voicemail from Anonymous, didn't leave his name, but it's sort of the same request, so let's listen to that voicemail.
It's your show, and I'm not the best at social. Hi guys, so been listening to your show, and I'm not the best at social media or understanding how you use Twitter and that kind of thing. And I was thinking that it'd probably be a good idea for you guys to just do a newbie show, a show just teaching us. You know, even though it's kind of expected for everybody to know how to use Facebook and Twitter, but you know, wouldn't it be great to just teach us how? And I've got like 20 Twitter. Or whatever, I follow 20 Twitter people, and sometimes I don't even like the mainstream, so I can get all this news you guys talk about. You know, just some basic stuff. Could you do like a, you know, minute of the show that's the tip of the week, that, you know, a tip of how to use social for the newbie?
So he gets cut off, but Amber, I think the request is pretty similar here, is that folks... that, and I'm always being accused of using the word folks too much, so sorry for anybody who's playing a drinking game. Drink, because I just said it again. but a lot of people who are trying to be part of social media, and they don't necessarily already have a big group of friends who are on Twitter. Just to use an example, this applies to a lot of other social networks too, and it's like, how do you get involved when no one's really following you and you feel like you're just talking to nobody?
Okay, so this is my advice for people. And I like to equate this to going to the gym, Sarah, because we all know if we only go to the gym once a week, we're not going to see the results we want to see. And the reality is we can go to the gym for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and the chances are, you know, we may not be able to actually see, okay, I'm frustrated, I keep going, but I'm not losing weight. Well, with social media, I think especially Twitter, you kind of feel like that. Like, I'm out there, I posted a few things and nothing is sort of happening. So what I would say for newbies, a really good tip, and I know this has helped a lot of people who I've helped get on Twitter, is to commit every day to following, let's say, 10 new people. So following 10 new people and having conversations or saying hi or like sharing links with like half of them, and kind of committing to that as sort of part of your daily routine. And then literally within, you know, a few weeks, you should have some sense of community and people who are out there who are having conversations with you and talking with you as well. So it takes a lot of effort. It's not like you can just show up and something's going to happen. You have to really put yourself out there and start getting immersed in conversations that other people are having.
That's a good tip. What about, I mean, but you don't just want to follow 10 random people each day, or I guess you could, but you'd want to make sure that, hey, if this person isn't, if I'm not getting a lot out of it, or somehow I feel negatively towards what I'm getting from this Twitter feed, you can always just experiment, right? And follow other folks. Maybe someone, you know, if Amber is following a lot of people and you think, oh, I have a lot in common with Amber, I'm probably going to be interested in a lot of the people that she's interested in. You can just browse who Amber's following and pick and choose.
Or use that wefollow.com, and we're both familiar with that site. Mm-hmm. I love that. And I actually show that a lot when I'm talking to different groups, because it allows you to identify people per industry or category. So you can go in, let's say you're in the insurance business, you can search insurance on WeFollow and get a list of the top people who are in the insurance world who are on Twitter, and literally like the most influential people, the people with the most followers. And then you can look through some of them and think, hey, you know, these people are relevant to my business. This is where I can start. So WeFollow tends to be a great point, a jumping off point for finding people to follow who are relevant and talking about stuff that is of interest to you.
Well, so yeah, I guess the moral of the story is it can be hard to jump into social media when you don't feel like you've got that built-in community already. But, you know, a lot of people started that way. And the more that you interact, and I think that holds true to even sort of the old way of comment on other people's posts if you want people to, you know, read your stuff. And just the interactivity is the name of the game. And you really can get a lot out of it. But it, you know, it takes some time. You know, you got to work at it. It's not effortless, just like your gym analogy.
Yeah, exactly.
Ever.
It doesn't happen overnight, right? It takes a while.
Exactly.
So, Sarah, we also got another email from Vaughn, who wrote about clout. We had a great conversation about clout. I think it was last week.
Yeah.
Clout, which allows you to get a score for how influential you are on Twitter. We sort of both said that you don't get too stuck on the scores. Maybe it's a good idea, but you don't want to get too tied to that. And nonetheless, Vaughn has written us to talk about how he uses Clout, and I think this is kind of interesting.
Yeah, he says, I wanted to let you know how I view Clout. For me, it's not about reputation and comparison, because we had said you don't want it to become too much of a popularity contest, and we're a little uncomfortable with those sorts of services. Vaughn uses it as an indicator to see, am I using Twitter the right way, and am I using it effectively? I like to see the people that I'm influencing and who I am influenced by. I think it does a good job of telling me how I'm engaged, as well as how many people are engaged with me. I'm interested in being a useful member in society. I want to talk about it and share things that are beneficial to my social network. And I think Clout helps me show how I'm doing at that. Vaughn, that's a really good point. I actually went back, Amber, and once I read Vaughn's email and just spent a little bit more time on Clout to get a sense of, you know, I think that I was a little bit stuck on what my score was before and the fact that it had dropped for reasons that were somewhat unbeknownst to me. And a little less time on who exactly Clout was telling me I was influencing and who I was am influenced by and what category Clout has lumped me in the broadcaster category, because apparently my habits show that I'm very good at disseminating information to a large number of people. But I'm influenced by Gina Trapani, for example. And if I click on her profile, she's a pundit, which they categorize her as someone who doesn't just share news, but creates news, widespread opinions, highly trusted, recognized as a leader. And so I was like, wow, that's interesting. So I compared our graphs, and they have these kind of neat graphical representations of how I show up on the style comparison board, as opposed to Gina, for example, and just kind of how we measure up to each other. And of course, we're not, you know, again, Gina and I don't do the exact same kind of work. I mean, some of our stuff overlaps a lot, but not all of it. And she has a lot more followers than I do. So, I mean, there's certain numbers that are just going to look better on her graph. But I did kind of feel like, you know, maybe Vaughn is onto something, where if you want to really pay attention to influential power that people have and how you interact with those people regularly and how that affects how other people see you. I mean, maybe not just even, you know, forget the Clout number, but it's a representation of how real people may be viewing you. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I mean, I think it has its place, but, you know, just don't get too obsessed or upset about it if you're not happy with your score.
Exactly. Definitely don't get upset about it. That's
for still
sure.
Love you here on the Social Hour. It's all good. Sarah, I love getting voicemails from people. I think it's probably one of the best parts of the show is just getting that feedback so people can leave us voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL.
2626-SOCIAL, that's right. And of course, please keep emailing us. We get a lot of emails from you. It's awesome. Awesome. You know what we don't get a lot of are videos. If you want to show us your smiling face or your frowny face, or just, I don't know, maybe you're just ambivalent face, you can always upload a video to YouTube or Vimeo or just anywhere that you can send us a link from that video. If you keep it to about 30 seconds or less, that's the most helpful for us. But voicemails, emails, videos, any way that you want to contact us, we're really happy to hear from you. And we take your feedback seriously because we want the show to be as good as possible for you. Amber, what do you think about a little something called an audiobook?
You know what? I actually was just poking around on Audible, which is our one of our sponsors this week. And I was looking for a book on Steve Jobs because I thought it would be kind of appropriate, all things considered. Mm-hmm. And I think I found a good pick. It's called The Steve Jobs Way: iLeadership for a New Generation. It's sold pretty well, and it has some great reviews. It's narrated by Christopher Hurt. I'm not familiar with him, but again, some really good feedback on this particular book or audiobook.
You know, it's interesting because there is it's going to be the real authorized biography of Steve Jobs coming out next year, but that's not till next year. So, and I always wondered about authorized biographies versus obviously unauthorized ones, because you wonder, well, the person that they're talking about, how much do they have the power to say, I'm vetoing this whole chapter because it doesn't make me look good, or so on and so forth? I mean, Steve Jobs is such a fascinating person, but you definitely get the sense that he's got a lot of power over what types of information are shared about certainly his personal life.
Yeah.
Let's actually listen to a sample from the book and see if the Steve Jobs way sounds like it might be your cup of tea.
I was sitting in the waiting area of a restaurant, which has to be one of the most unlikely places in the world for an encounter that changes your life. The headline story I was reading in the business section told about the calamitous end of startup Eagle Computer. A young man who was also waiting was reading the same article. We fell into conversation, and I shared my connection with that story. I had just recently told my boss, Intel President Andy Grove, that I would be quitting my position at his company to join the guys who were starting Eagle Computer.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Sounds good, huh?
Yeah, it really does. It sounds like something that you could commute to, or maybe sort of drift off to sleep to if you're one of those people who just wants to get a little more of a sense of what Steve Jobs might have been thinking that day that he quit Intel, kind of thing.
So interesting. I know.
That's a good pick, Amber.
Well, I was just thinking, I mean, it's all Steve Jobs, right? You know, this week, a lot of talk about him. So it seems like it would be a good one to listen to. I got to listen to that now, Sarah. It is kind of mesmerizing, you know?
Everything about, I mean, I'm mesmerized by him, that's for sure. I mean, even if I don't agree with everything Steve Jobs, I mean, you got to admit, he's a fascinating character. You know, and we're certainly not the only people to think so. This is a good pick. If you are interested in the Steve Jobs way and you think, well, yeah, that sounds pretty cool, but I don't know if audiobooks are the thing for me, guess what? You can get it for free if you go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. We will give you this book for free. Well, actually, Audible will, because they're just awesome, and that's sort of the way that they're awesome, is that they want you to try out a free audiobook and get a sense of why it is a really, really interesting, different, cool way to be able to absorb a book by listening. audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Audible podcast, not classed. Sorry, a bit of a
Sarah's
cold.
Getting sick.
Everything I say sounds weird right now. But in any case, audiobooks are really cool. I say commuting because I commute a lot. But think, you know, if you're at the gym, if you're cooking, you know, you just want to crank up the speakers and actually read a book without actually having to sit down and read. There are so many ways that it comes in handy. You just want to take a walk and kind of get lost in the world of Steve Jobs. This is the way to do it. audiblepodcast.com/social hour and get your free book. We're giving you a free book. You can't not take that. And now, Amber, I believe it's time for Rad or Fad, and this is one of your choices, and I don't know how I feel about it.
Sarah, there's a lot of pressure on for the Rad or Fad segment. I really know. It's just like doing the show with Leo. I just have to impress you and find something that maybe you haven't seen or will surprise you. This week I stumbled across these video glasses, and they stream everything you do to social media sites. So the idea is a pair of glasses with a lens in it via either Bluetooth or Wi-Fi. They will stream to a live video site, and then people can essentially join in on whatever it is that you're seeing through these glasses. Now, the frames allow you to put in your own lenses if you obviously have prescription lenses and you want to customize those a little bit. I should say that this is a Kickstarter project, so it's not actually... the product isn't available in stores just yet.
Now, some folks in chat are already saying fad.
Yeah,
so we're getting a few fads already. And I think, do you think it's because people think nobody really wants to see what anyone's looking at, because it almost seems like the latest version of camera attached to the head, live streaming on Ustream type of a thing?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that it is totally faddish. I'm not sure how rad this is. I mean, you know, most people, I don't know if, you know, watching what someone is watching. Yeah, it's just like the head cams. It's really not that exciting. So I think it falls into the category of fad, which might explain why no one has really put this out there before. yes, Sarah, we have discovered a fad.
I think I'm going to go with fad too. And it's not because it's not a cool idea. I just don't know how often it would be a cool idea. I guess if you were, let's say your favorite celebrity. I mean, so Johnny Depp is my favorite celebrity. If he was going to be sharing his point of view with me, you know, for 24 hours or something, is, I don't know, a way to promote a movie. I don't know. But a way for me to look into his life for a day, you know, maybe if it was centered around an event, I could get behind that idea. But you feel like the problem with these is that everyone wants to kind of be the star, and imagine how many folks might just be putting out kind of useless information, especially video streaming. I mean, oh God, think of the bandwidth that just no one's really interested in. I mean, I feel that way with live streaming already. There's a lot of live streaming still going on, but remember the early days of Quick and Ustream, and people were just streaming sort of nothing. And that seems to have died down a little bit, at least in my circles, because a lot of it is just not that interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think it's it definitely is faddish. And hopefully next week, though, Sarah, I'll try to find something rad. You know, we don't want to be all, I'm going to use the word Debbie Downer, is that bad?
Right, exactly. We have to think some things are rad anyway.
Yes, and we were on a phase there. We had a few weeks where pretty much everything was rad, and then I think we recognized that we have to identify some fads. So next week, we're looking out for something rad. Maybe someone has something rad out there, and they want to email us and let us know about it, and we can take a look at it. Obviously, it's got to be sort of in the social stream, and it might fall into our last feature piece on the show.
Absolutely, yeah. We definitely want to hear your rad or fad ideas. Whether you think something is rad or fad, you can even float us a link and say, I don't know, what do you guys think? Or you can say, this is rad, here is why, and we'll read your explanation on the show. Definitely do that, because God knows, everybody's got an opinion. Video glasses, streaming, social activity, fad for now. Who knows? Maybe in another couple years, everyone will think it's rad. Things do change quickly in the social universe.
We could be wearing them any minute now, Sarah.
That's true. Yeah. All right, Amber, that's it for this episode of The Social Hour. We started a little bit late. And again, we're streaming at sort of a weird time, but still on Mondays. But I think we kept it to about an hour. A reminder to everybody that we're live on Mondays regularly at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. And of course, you can find us, subscribe to us, find us on iTunes, find us on YouTube. We upload everything to YouTube. Amber, I noticed that you've been embedding our videos on your personal website. I should totally start doing that. I don't know why I haven't been. But we try to make it as easy as possible for you guys to enjoy the show. So we really appreciate you doing so. Amber, I want you to be able to go and enjoy the rest of your evening, because I know it's really late where you are. So thanks for doing the show late to accommodate our live coverage earlier today.
No problem. And I hope you feel better, get better. And I will see you next week.
Okay, Amber. See you next week. We'll see you guys next week on The Social Hour. Bye-bye.